And in the meantime, just date a lot. You've got essentially from 16 to 25 to make up for when you should have been dating and hanging out with lots of people and figuring out who you are and what you want, what you like. Go do that. It's just enjoy it. Don't worry about what's going to happen when, with whom. Just enjoy hanging out with people, getting to know
people. Great advice to not jump into another relationship right away. You're listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and I'm here to help you prioritize your pleasure and liberate the conversation around sex. Do you remember Loveline? Well, it was a call-in radio show hosted by Dr. Drupinsky to get your love and dating questions answered. It was the first of its kind. Well, it holds a special place in my heart because I used to co-host it. It was such an honor. So today, in celebration of my career leading up to my new book, Smart Sex, out today, I'm inviting my dear friend Dr. Drew onto Sex with Emily to help me answer your sex questions, Loveline style. First, what does it mean when you feel like your long-distance partner is following you to your next city? Is that loving? Is it creepy? Next, a college guy wants to know, how do you find real connection amid hookup culture? Or what about moving on from a toxic sexual relationship? How do you claim your own desires now that you're single? All this and more with me and Dr. Drew. Intentions with Emily for each episode. I want to start off by setting an intention for the show, and I encourage you all to do the same. My intention is to give you a little Loveline nostalgia, but also let you hear from people just like you who are navigating the tender world of sex and relationships. Hey, we're all learning, and after today's episode, I think you'll be able to give yourself grace the next time you run into challenges. Please rate and review Sex with Emily wherever you listen to the show. It really helps us, helps get the show out there to more people. My new articles, How to Make a Mess in Bed, and Double the O, Double the Pleasure, How to Have Blended and Multiple Orgasms are up on sexwithemily.com. Also, check out my YouTube channel, social media, and TikTok. It's all at Sex with Emily for more sex tips and advice. If you want to ask me questions, do it. Leave me your questions or message me at sexwithemily.com/askemily or call my hotline 559-TALK-SEX or 559-825-5739. All right, guys, today is a very big day. My book, Smart Sex, is officially out in the world. You can buy it right now. Just click the link. Could be at your house tomorrow. And it really is the sex Bible. And I'm going to go on a limb and say probably the last sex book you're ever going to need. The thing about the book that I love is that it took me almost 2 years to write this book. It's a lot of my greatest tips over the years. Everything that you've ever wanted to know about sex, but you know, there's a lot in there that I really have never shared before. Not only about sex, I share stories about myself, about my own relationships and why they ended and decisions I made that I'm not proud of, but I've learned so much from. I think you're going to be able to learn from my own stories that I really never had a chance to tell you about on the podcast all these years. And there's a lot about the psychology of sex, what's holding you back. And in fact, one of my favorite chapters is the positions chapter. Beyond the pictures, which are a good time, I also give you the pros of each sex position, the cons of each sex position, and how to adapt each one. Also have chapters like Ready, Willing, and Anal, another one of my favorite chapters where we go really into anal, giving and receiving. The same thing with going down the oral sex chapter. This is a special book. I know it's gonna change your life. I appreciate all of you, and you can buy it right now. It's available today. Order it now and get it tomorrow. Click the link in the show notes and put it to practice this weekend. It's that kind of book. Read it with your partner, read it with your friends. My friends are already having book clubs where they're like sitting around having margaritas and then going home and having the best sex of their lives. So that's what I want for you. Let's get some smart sex into your lives. Thank you everybody for supporting it. And I can't wait to hear what you think of the book. It's all happening today. Please, please, I love you all. I would love if you would order it now and today. It really helps us. And we want to be on the New York Times bestseller list. It's such an honor to make it to the New York Times bestseller list. I mean, you got to sell a lot of books. But honestly, to see that other people thinking, wow, Atomic Habits and Smart Sex, what does that mean? How can I have more pleasure in my life? How can I be smarter sexually? That's what we want. We just want more people than ever to have the sex life they deserve. That is my mission on the planet, and I want it for you. I am so grateful for you all and all of your support. I love you all, and I can't wait to talk about the book with you. Also, if you want to order it from Bookshop, you can get 10% off with the code SMARTSEX. Lastly, this episode is brought to you by Promescent. I co-hosted Loveline 10 years ago, which is about the same time that I met the founder of Promescent, Jeff Abraham, and I just fell in love with their products. Let me tell you why. Promescent makes the one and only delay spray I recommend to anyone who's looking to delay their orgasms. I wouldn't even bother with anything else. It helps penis owners last up to 64% longer in bed, long lasting, won't transfer to your partner, and it's just perfect for anyone who struggles with premature ejaculation. It happens. Or maybe you want to practice edging or have longer sessions. Promescent will help with that. They also have an incredible warming arousal gel for vulva owners, which I love. It's really fun to put on before partnered sex, solo sex, during the day. You put it on, you have this tinkling sensation, and you're like, okay, let's go. This feels good. I'm turned on. I've sworn by Promescent the last 10 years. If you want to hop on the Promescent wave yourself, go to promescent.com/Emily to save 15% off your order. That's promescent.com/Emily, or click the link in the show notes for 15% off. All right, everyone, enjoy this episode. Imagine a toy so iconic it practically wrote the playbook for pleasure. Allow me to introduce or reintroduce you to the Magic Wand, aka the Cadillac of Vibrators. The Magic Wand Original is a trusted companion in the journey of joy. Whether it's your first time chasing an orgasm or you're looking to give your partner a spine-tingling erotic massage, the Magic Wand should be your go-to. With powerful rumbles and several different rhythms and patterns, it's no wonder the Magic Wand has scooped up accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades. I'm so enamored with mine, I've customized my bedside table just to keep it within arm's reach at all times. But the magic doesn't stop with the original Magic Wand. The Magic Wand family has grown over the years, offering a variety of models to suit every lifestyle. Go cord-free with the Magic Wand Rechargeable. Embrace compact power without compromising intensity with the Magic Wand Mini. I love this Mini. Or the Micro, which is just teeny tiny and really powerful. Or enjoy a range of sensations with the Magic Wand Plus. Each model delivers the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original a legend. So are you ready to experience the magic? Visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to enchant pleasure seekers around the globe. That's sexwithemily.com/magicwand. Magic Wand, more than just a vibrator. Did you know that your gut is directly connected to your brain and can contribute to anxiety, stress, and depression, which, by the way, can also impact your sexual health? So here's my secret weapon for gut health, Just Thrive Probiotic. Now listen up. Just Thrive isn't just any ordinary probiotic. It is the only one that survives your stomach acid and reaches your gut 100% alive. All those others, the ones that come in fancy drinks or you gotta refrigerate, nope, that's not even a thing. This is the one. I've noticed significant changes to my overall health. Like, this might be TMI, but I'm way more regular and my skin is glowing. Think of Just Thrive like your personal gut gardener. It maintains the health of your gut by weeding out the bad bacteria that causes all those digestive issues and then replenishes the good, making it a total game changer for your digestion, your immune system, your skin, even your mood and sexual health. And if you want to check out my episode with Just Thrive's founder, Tina Anderson, we talk all about how gut bacteria plays a crucial role in your overall happiness, including your sex life. Because a healthy, balanced gut means less stress and more energy. So if you want to check it out, I'm offering a deal for my listeners. You can save 20% off site-wide at justthrivehealth.com with the promo code SEXWITHEMILY. That's 20% off on the probiotic that's truly changing lives and making waves in the wellness community. Everyone's talking about it. Don't just take my word for it. Try it for yourself. Go to justthrivehealth.com. Use promo code SEXWITHEMILY for 20% off. Dr. Drew Pinsky is a doctor and radio and television personality, most known for his monumental weekly sex and relationship radio show, Loveline. Dr. Drew has been featured on MTV, HLN, and the wildly popular Celebrity Rehab with Dr. Drew on VH1. He continues a legacy of Loveline with his current podcast, Dr. Drew After Dark, and also hosts the Dr. Drew podcast and Ask Dr. Drew. So excited to be here with my good friend and former colleague, but I feel like we always collab together, Dr. Drew Pinsky. Yeah. Thank you for being here.
I refuse to be a former colleague. No.
We always are colleagues. We're always going to collab, which is why I'm having you here today, because I really think when I'm reflecting right now on this big day, my book's releasing, there's been, you know, almost 18 years doing this work, that when I look back on it, you've always been such a good friend and mentor. And the time that we spent at Loveline was some of my favorite times. And it was always a coveted to be on that show, and then to get this next to you was such an honor, and to be your friend now
turned out
even more than an honor.
Well, listen, you're very kind, but it was I enjoyed it maybe more than even you. But as I look back, you know, there were chapters of that show. You know, it was 35 years, but you were a major chapter. And when I think back to those shows, there was something special about those shows. They were very fun.
Yeah. I really enjoyed our time, me, you, and Mike Catherwood. Yeah. And then I got, you know, good with taking the callers, and that was fun. You know, and then I did the serious show after that, but I enjoyed it, Drew. So how are you doing today?
I'm good. I had some weird ophthalmological symptoms, so I just got back from the ophthalmologist, and my pupils look big because I had them dilated because I have a stiff vitreous because my eyes are old, and it's driving me to just crazy, but I'm getting everything like 10 years ahead of schedule, except wrinkles.
Really?
You're
so healthy.
I know. Everything except wrinkles. I've turned wrinkles.
Every time I see you.
Wrinkles have been converted into end organ problems, major organ problems.
God. Every time I see you, you look younger, so I can understand the eye thing. I wouldn't know. But Drew, do you remember like when we first met on Loveline? Do you remember that I came in? I just remember being intimidated. You were kind and cool.
Good.
But I was like, for so long, I was so excited to do Loveline. You know, just to remind everyone that Loveline was around for 35 years. It was the first call-in. I got to set the context here because some people might not know. Is that first call-in sex talk radio show ever, right?
Ruth was alongside. Ruth was alongside of it. But I kept taking great issue with her because I kept – and by the way, I love her and I've met her since and she is a delightful person and talent. But I kept saying, look, there's serious medical shit going on. We have this thing called AIDS. You've not heard about it. We have to talk about it. She kept saying, you need to have good sex. I'm like, young people are there. They got that part down. It was the 80s. There was a lot of it going on. It just, they were having biological consequences and nobody was paying any attention to that. So that's sort of what got me started in the whole thing. But by the time you came to us, it was, what were the years?
2012.
I was going
to
say
2012 to 2017. I just moved to LA and they're like, we're trying out female hosts. I was like, I've been made for this job. I already been doing my podcast at the time for 7 years at the time. And just to remind everyone, when I started my podcast in 2005, Loveline was at the time, you know, the only show that was doing this. Yeah. And I met our friend Max Krasny because like someone set up a thing for him. And I said, I want to be on the radio and do things. Like, well, it took Loveline 10 years to be fully syndicated. And it was just the show that I,
10 years,
you know, admired. And everyone learned about sex through YouTube.
It took 10 years to go from one night a week to 5 nights a week. That was 10 years. And then it went to 5 nights a week. And then like 5 years later, it got syndicated. But it got syndicated really, really because of MTV. I mean, that was sort of the driving.
Yeah, with you and Adam.
Yeah, that was sort of the driving force. And those years when you were in there, I'm so curious to pick your brain too, because I remember us having a lot of fun, right? It was a very upbeat time. And Mike is always fun and funny, but so were you. And
yeah.
And by the time those years came around, did you go all the way to the end?
I did.
Wow.
It was me, you, and Adam were on the last show.
Oh, my God. And so, oh, my God, that's so crazy. And by the time we got to that point, we were dealing with a lot of other stuff, right? I mean, all the biological stuff was around, but people had the internet so they could find information. And we, you know, we never really did get into was sort of gender and that kind of stuff. It really wasn't happening yet, which is interesting that it's only been 5 or 6 years.
I think our last show was in 2017. And I guess a lot has changed. But if you had to think, Drew, of all the years, if I asked you, what are the three most common questions you got asked for 35 years on Loveline?
Yeah.
What did you say? What would you have to say they were?
Have you been on After Dark yet? The Dr. After Dark show?
What was the one that
Austin?
I was on recently? No, that was, I was on the Dr. Drew podcast recently.
No, there's, I do a show in at your mom's house in Austin, Texas. And it's sort of with comedians. It's sort of a new version of Loveline. It's called Dr. Drew After Dark. And it's more of a video thing. It's very complicated. You got to come. You got to come. We've lately started taking phone calls even. So it's like the old days to a certain extent. And lo and behold, in spite of there being all the information and all the stuff available, same old questions, same stuff starts coming up.
Exactly.
Same stuff. and at the core, I'm sorry to tell you, there's two themes that, the one theme that men call with, and one theme that women call with. Okay. And women actually have been mixing up a little more than they used to. I got to hand it. Women have evolved. So that's good. Men, same thing. Am I normal? And more specifically, my penis. Is this normal? Is that normal? Is it behaving normal? Is it acting normal? Is it normal size? Is it normal? Just everything. Yeah. Normal angle, normal, everything. Right? Susan is on the other end of the mic here, and she always used to call. Susan, are you still there? What did you used to call? What did you used to call love line?
Penis line.
Because and after dark still has some of that same stuff, right?
Hours of men's penises.
Oh my God. Susan Pinsky joining us here. I know. Am I normal? Is my penis normal? Is what it's doing normal?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so and to some extent, I mean, it makes sense if you understand the neurobiology of a male system. There's a lot of nerve material hooked into our central nervous system from that region, a lot. And so like when men come out of comas, the first thing they start doing is messing with their junk. Not that they're unconsciously, just automatically, before they even get to consciousness. And just because there's stuff going on, and they just, that's where their hands go, where there's something going on.
Isn't it soothing too for men? Isn't it kind of a self-soothing?
Sure. Some of it's that. It's just, okay. it's everything, right? Not all things, right. And so there's still that. Men are still worried that they're not normal. And I would say probably a little more emphasis on the performance these days, as opposed to in the past when it actually was, you know, issues of anatomy and function and that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. And you can sort of figure that out from the internet now, I think, which is probably why the performance is more of an issue. And then for women, it was always, what the fuck is up with men? What is going on with these? I can't figure this dude out. I can't figure this. Really? What is, like, it's all a big mystery. Like, I spent a lot of time, you probably remember back in the old days, I would just say, it's so simple. Don't overthink it. It's so simple, it's disappointing. And that's what women don't like. The men are actually food, sex, climax. That's about it. There's not a lot else going on. And so when you start making more out of it, you're oftentimes moving away from what's really going on.
Wait, Drew, this is so interesting. So do you mean the conversations about why can't I expect more from him? Like more of the emotional intelligence stuff? Because isn't that what women want?
No.
Overthinking it? Yeah.
Yeah. You and I have talked about this stuff over the years, of course. And to ask for more, see, men aim to please, but you have to be very specific and very explicit with us. You can't hint. You can't expect us to know. It just does not work like that. You have to be like, Susan, you're staying in the room here, so I'm going to bug you. Okay, you ready? Okay. She used to go, I need more romance and intimacy. And I would hear Charlie Brown's teacher, like, wah, 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 wah. And, right? Susan, remember those days?
Yeah. My therapist said we need to take more breaks.
Yeah.
Okay. From our family. This is so good. Okay. And you
didn't know what
romance.
Did.
Right. You never did.
Well,
but now are, right?
Well, now I'm better, right?
Yeah. Because our kids are 30. So it's a lot easier to get away.
Right. But I think I'm more, I don't know, I'm more present, right? Aren't I?
Yeah. You're here all the time.
Right. Okay. Now it's gone the other way. Now it's like you're get
too
the hell
present.
Out of here.
You're
too much, present. Too much. Get out of here. Get out of my foot.
Yeah. Can I go now? So,
you know what?
No.
If you do, turn the air on a little bit hotter here.
But wait, that's so interesting. So I love you, Susan Pinsky, First Lady of Love.
I love you too, Emily Morris.
This is so great. So specifically like romance, and people say that all the time, like I need you to make an effort. But what does it mean? So if Susan says
no
to you,
idea.
I want romance.
We're so explicit. We're really literal. We're very literal with everything. So
true, dude.
Very,
because
very
then, so what we're saying is I like to make things into like a teachable moment here.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What I'm hearing is I'm actually thinking to my friend Lisa Bilyeu. Lisa and Tom Bilyeu, they've got podcasts, Impact Theory. I've been on their shows a bunch. They're old friends.
Yeah,
they've been together 20 years. And so what she said to me when they first started, maybe 10 years ago, she really wanted flowers on Valentine's Day. It was so important to her. And every year he'd forget. And finally, she literally called his assistant, put it on his calendar, buy me flowers. And she, this might seem so simple. And people are like, oh, well, if I have to ask for it, it doesn't really mean anything. No, it means that she gets her flowers need met.
Yeah. If you don't ask for it, it ain't going to happen.
Right, like, just be specific.
Or at least help us understand what you want. And if we get, now we'll make mistakes too. Like if we can forget, and it's like not okay to forget once it has been made clear to you, right? I mean, once you do understand what's needed and you either don't make the effort or you forget or whatever, that's not okay. I mean, it's not that that doesn't happen. It does. But to make more of it, Because that is the third question, which is how do you get people to sort of do what you want in a relationship kind of thing?
Huh, how do you? It's like repetition, though, too. I think going back to what you said, to tell someone something once and expect them to change. Change is really hard. So you need support in a relationship to change. You need a partner who's on the same page with you and who's like, I'm willing to help you along here, get my needs met. I don't know why that's so foreign. Yeah.
There are actually scientific disciplines built around change, as I'm sure you're aware. And there's pre-contemplative, contemplative, planning, change, and then maintenance. That's what is required for a simple change for a human being. You have to think about it. You have to convince yourself you're going to do it. You have to decide you're going to do it. You have to plan to do it. You have to do it. And then the hardest part is the maintenance. You have to maintain the change. And that's the part that everybody screws up on. They feel like, oh, I did it now. And everything goes back the way it was. Maintaining change is one day at a time. It's a daily process. And having worked in that world of change, when people's lives depend upon it and when their whole biology is fighting them, I've learned to see how difficult change can be for people.
You mean like with rehab?
In addiction, yeah.
Addiction. And consistency, I guess, is that maintenance. Is you have to be, I just find like for myself, I have to be consistent with things.
Well, consistent, but it requires, different things require different processes, but they all require an active either procedure or process. It's something you're doing on a regular basis. Aristotle pointed it out, 3,000 years ago, which was that, things like character and habits need to be a way of life. They need to be a regular thing. You can't just expect to have, high virtue just because you declare yourself a virtuous person. You have to practice it and then do it on a regular basis. He was saying back many thousand years ago that it was true of character, but I think it's true of morality and everything. I think you got to sort of practice these things so they become automatic.
It's so true, Drew. It's all practice. Practicing even your, I think about this too, your self-esteem or confidence. People are asking about all those things too. It's a practice. All the personality traits, things that you want, things that you covet, things that you want to change. Like it is a practice to keep
yourself. Did I read that in your book about confidence?
Yeah, I did write about confidence. Yeah.
Yeah, because I thought you kind of nailed it when brought it up again just now, which is that confidence isn't something you declare. You don't magically have confidence. Self-talk is helpful. It's not going to hurt you, but the self-talk about being confident doesn't make you confident.
No.
It's being a certain kind of person, living a certain kind of life, engaging in certain practices over and over and over again.
Right. Okay, so men are simpler than we think. We have to be specific.
Yep.
Okay, so what about the women? What have we found is the theme there?
So I spent a lot of years saying that the female brain was superior to the male brain and that we needed the men to be listening to the women's instincts in relationships and to follow with some of the access to emotion and intimacy and things that women seem to have with greater ease than men do. I don't know anymore if that's we may have gone too far with that. I don't know, because there needs to be some mutuality in it. There's benefits of both, and it feels like since the Me Too movement, men have been so marginalized that they're actually frightened and feel diminished and feel like they're not worthwhile. And that wasn't ever my point. That was not what I was saying.
What I was saying was
you just got to trust this brain. This brain has a lot of attributes that your brain does not have. And there's a lot of richness there that you could have access to that you may not realize you have access to. Instead, we've gone, this is a better brain, which I was advocating. And you with your toxic brain, male, bad, no good, marginalized.
Right.
Let's put that over
true.
Here.
So, yeah. No,
big mistake. Big mistake.
Well, it's not that way. We're just different. And there's many of these were very similar.
Of course, way more similarities than differences. Of course. I mean, yes, I get it. But there are differences that there we are. Can sort of learn. I mean,
we can all learn from each other. But Drew, are you seeing this with men? And I think we did talk about this on your show too, but about men feeling like since Me Too that they don't really know how to be in relationship with women at all. Like even at work.
It is not good. I have a feeling, my sense is that's why women are sort of drifting towards older men, because older men don't feel that way the way the younger ones have been crushed by, they're entered their adulthood with this, you're bad, you're a rapist, you're an abuser, you're toxic. And they don't want to be seen that way at all. Of course not.
Yeah.
And so they get confused. And then they don't practice the skills that are necessary to navigate relationships and dating and breaking up and forming relationships. They just don't have that. And there we go. Good times,
they're like
everybody.
Failure to launch. They're not even trying. They don't even have the...
They just don't know where to start.
Well, this, you know, I think they should start, you know, now that my book came out today, I do think it's a call for smart sex.
Start with your book.
Five pillars of sexual intelligence. You know, you remember when emotional intelligence came out in the 90s? Everyone's like, oh, I just thought my SAT scores made me smart. And then you're like, oh, I have great empathy. I have compassion. I know, you know, and I think the same thing goes for, I know the same thing goes for sexual intelligence, understanding that it's not just one thing. It's not the size of your penis. It's not your body. It's not how you feel about your body, but there's, you know, it's your health, your wellness, all the things.
And that is something that you point out in the book, and that's something that was sort of, I guess what I'm leaning on is the idea that that was mental health and physical health was always thought to be very embedded in that, really since the days of Freud. Like that was an important thing. And then we sort of split it. Like there's that and then there's health. And they are all very intimately entwined.
Right. Sex has been sort of siloed. It's a separate thing that we'll get to one day that we'll deal with it. I don't really know what's happening. And I think a lot of people sort of go in the bedroom and they think they just like kind of close their eyes, hope for the best, right? Not sure that's what's going to happen.
And by the way, we were watching 90 Day Fiancé last night, and this gynecologist was talking to one of the women. 90 Day Fiancé is a sign of how bad COVID was for us, the fact that we still watch it. But Susan just screamed out. She goes, that's the wrong doctor. Don't talk to that guy. He's not hearing you. He can't talk about these things, which I find just terribly irresponsible in my profession when they can't talk about that as part of your overall health.
Wait, what happened? She went to see a gynecologist and he wouldn't talk to her about it? Is that what you're saying?
She wanted a vaginoplasty and he got very uncomfortable. And she wanted to talk about her partner's performance and whether a vaginoplasty could help with that. And he was just like, I've heard enough. I've heard everything. I don't normally talk about it. So you're a gynecologist.
You're a gynecologist. This is a job. This is what I'm glad we're bringing this up, because so many people, so many women, that's the only doctor they go to for everything. And then when they go for sex challenges, perimenopause or menopause or any of those things, a lot of times Western doctors who've been trained in gynecology the last whatever 30 years don't have the up-to-date knowledge and understanding and don't have, are they still, it's still taboo and shameful to talk about sex?
Well, it's not the taboo. They just don't have a skill set and they're uncomfortable. And they're uncomfortable. And that's like, that's irresponsible to be, you're uncomfortable, the patient's uncomfortable.
Drew had a urologist like that.
Yeah.
Susan, I wanted to talk about sex because he gave me this book to read before his prostate cancer removal. And he said that I was going to have to start having sexual acts with him after he got out of the OR. And I was like, this is weird. Like, and I asked him, I go, how long is it going to be before he can have sex? And he started giggling. And I was like, dude, what? And then I was like, I don't like this guy. Like, he's not answering my question. I'm not trying to be cute. Okay. I just want to know the facts.
And you were the one that yelled out on the
same thing with her on 90 Day Fiancé.
The TV show last night. She
like,
goes,
I want to know when his penis is going to be erect again. Okay.
Exactly.
I want to know the
like,
facts.
That's all I want to know. Wait, why is the urologist laughing at a penis question? I don't know.
Exactly.
That makes zero sense to me.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, that creepy. Is weird. That is
we changed weird. Doctors, by the way.
Glad to hear it. I remember all of that, Drew. I remember all that you went through.
Were you around for all that?
I was around, Drew. That was like, was that 8 years ago? 10. No.
It was like, the surgery was like the surgery was like 2000. You started when? What year?
2012.
That's about when I had the surgery.
I remember
just before that.
It was like a year after that. I think that's when we also got close. Oh, yeah, because I was in the hospital at the same time. I remember this. And I got some kind of weird sickness. And then you were in the hospital too. And we were texting and good times. We were bonding in the hospital. I think you made a good point. It's not that they don't have the knowledge or it's taboo. It's that it's literally the conversation around sex in 2023 still is not normalized, not even for your some of your gynecologists and urologists, and not even for humans to talk to their partners about sex.
That being so, you have to sort of speculate that there's some sort of natural discomfort that humans have with the topic for some reason, that there just is. I have a hard time putting it on society per se, because no one ever says, don't talk about that anymore. It doesn't happen. I mean, maybe in certain settings, I'm sure it does.
Culturally, religion,
Yeah. And then I get it when people are uncomfortable, but mostly people are encouraged to talk about it. I mean, look, we're having all these battles in amongst the various political groups now about stuff being talked about too soon in, you know, kindergarten and third grade. And when do we talk about this and what do we normalize? And it's clearly in the discussion now. People are talking about this stuff, and yet still people have weird discomfort. About
yeah. When people used to email me and say, well, my boyfriend and I were driving and we listened for 12. I was like, why? God, that sounds like a long time to listen to my podcast for 12 hours. And I always would get that. We're on a road trip. I think the more you hear people talking about something in a way that's like, you know, sunny with a chance of orgasms, like the weather and there's that kind of thing is like, oh, I have permission to do it. And it's because, Drew, even in the most liberal homes, parents are still not talking to their kids about sex. My friends say to me, I know my son's masturbating, but what am I going to do about it? Right.
Yeah.
And so I do think it starts younger. I do think it has to.
And yet, in situations where I have seen it opened up, the kids are uncomfortable. Why are you putting me through this? Why did you have to talk to me about this? I don't really want to talk about it. You forced me to talk about it. So they have the discomfort as well
culturally.
As the parents.
I think if they just say,
is it, or is
about.
There something about us as humans that sort of automatically weirdly happens?
I don't know.
I mean, or both, probably both. So most things are both.
Most things are both. Yeah. But again, I go to the Dutch countries in the Netherlands, and they're the only place in the world that has this comprehensive sex education that when the kids are young, baby, they name the parts, your vagina, your vulva, your penis. They don't have any shame around sex. They talk about masturbation. They talk about consent, who can touch them at young ages. And then every year they have sex ed. And so in those countries, it's been studied by other sex educators. It's just, they do it right. And it's not weird or awkward. Like the parents know when they're having sex. And sex is still hot. There are fewer teen pregnancies and people have more pleasure. Because, Drew, our sex education in America, it's all fear and danger. There's no pleasure and joy. Like, it's all like, you're going to get pregnant. You're going to see. But what if there was something like masturbation? Yeah. You're going to want to touch yourself. Anyway, so that's.
I think you're right. I think that's true.
I think there should be some of that. Like, parents, it's awkward, but your parents just fly in at 13 and talk to you about sex, come into your room and you're like, are you going to touch your penis? That's a lot. But if we started younger, it's not so weird. So that's the world I want to see, Drew. What about women? Oh, you said women are just kind of like, what the hell's going on with this guy?
Well, yeah. I'm trying to make sense of men. It's very hard for them. And I always just encourage them to keep it simple, very simple. It's usually not complicated, whatever it is. I mean, as you know, there's all kinds of pathologies that enter into relationships, right? And often traumatic reenactments and all that good stuff. And so that all figures in too. But I can't think of any specific examples off the top of my head, but generally I'm just encouraging people to keep it simple.
Yeah, exactly.
When you're understanding what your male partner wants, you know, what does he want? How do I can make it this way and that way? It's like, you know, it's a lot of, well, let's be fair. A lot of the stuff that I'm answering, particularly these days, again, is performance stuff. And women are wondering about that too with the men, like he never ejaculates or he ejaculates too quick or, you know, and of course, if it's he never ejaculates, women always blame themselves, always, which is never the case. Never, never, never.
Never the case.
I mean, just think of the 90 Day Fiancé woman getting a vaginoplasty because she decided that's the reason he has delayed ejaculation.
She's blaming herself because we don't have enough information. What if men were like, here's your owner's manual to your penis? You might come too quickly. You might have delayed ejaculation. I mean, we had a lot of delayed ejaculations too.
And whatever happens in our sexual performance has nothing to do with you.
Exactly. We all blame ourselves, but men don't blame. Well, men do blame themselves if their partner doesn't have an orgasm sometimes, right?
They blame themselves
less.
But again, we keep it simple. Like I didn't go long enough or something about, you know, what goes to for men is their adequacy. I'm not adequate for this to make this happen for her. You know, I'm not up to it because believe me, the reason he's there is because he really, really, really wants to be there. Not because he's not a little sort of attracted to you or he's, you know, worrying about something you see in the mirror and you think that's what he sees. He does not see that. I promise.
He's not thinking about that at all. The things that's keeping
us, we are
cock blocking ourselves from our best sex because we are so worried about what someone's thinking and they're not thinking that. I wish I could just wave a wand and everyone could be like, okay, I'm not going to worry about that anymore. What would happen?
Yeah, the inventories that women keep and take.
Exactly.
And stuff. Men, if they have a problem, they just go, I'm not up to it. I'm not good enough. That's sort of where they go.
And then
right
they
there.
Duck out, maybe. They don't even stick and try to make it work sometimes.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, sure. Yeah, because they feel embarrassed and they feel not up to it. And you'd be better off without me and all that kind of talk.
God, true. I appreciate you being here. And I love that we are reminiscing about our time on Love Life.
Well, let's do some more reminiscing.
Sex. Okay.
So, how did you get, what were the first shows like? I can't, well, you were just there all of a sudden.
I can't remember how that well, it's worked. Funny because I just got matched. Like, I think I came in one day and then another woman, and then they're like, you win. And then I was just there on Thursdays, and then sometimes I would stay longer, but I just, you know, it really was the highlight of my week, 10 to midnight. And a
lot of the stuff that Mike invented happened during those days too, like the You Live thing. Were you there when he invented that You Live?
Yeah, deal? You Live. People love that. He was a character.
And and Rudy. We had a few Rudy visits, I'm sure, when you were there.
Yes, Rudy.
Oh my God.
I'm just trying to think about. I guess we did get more sex. Maybe we always had sex questions when I was there. A lot of sex toys. We talked a lot about sex toys, of course, like we always do.
Was that woman that the Tupperware lady around when you were there? Do you remember her?
No, tell me more.
She was a kink sort of dominatrix or something. And would get paid to pee and poo on people.
Oh, okay.
And one guy would have her send her poo in a Tupperware container, which we found just astonishing and bizarre and bewildering and confusing. And we tried, I think her name was Kathleen or Catherine
or
something.
I totally remember this.
And we had a million questions for her. Like, really? Like, what kind of guy is this? It's like, what?
Would she call in to? I remember her too. Do you remember this story? There was a guy, he called in, and I don't know if it was like confessions. Remember when he says that question at night? Like, what? Like, it was a confession.
Yes. Confess
and he called in and said that he had been lying to his girlfriend of 2 years, telling her that he was a doctor. Maybe it was even longer than that.
I remember this.
He was told her he was a doctor. So every day he left in scrubs. And then he would like drive out of the house, and then he would like change in the car. And he was like, I don't know what he did, worked in like mechanic or something. But then he would come home in scrubs for like over 2 years. It was crazy. She literally thought he was like going to the hospital and doing the work. And he wasn't. So I don't know why that always remember that.
I remember that one vividly. That was, we were all not happy with that. We were very unhappy with that dude. And it was, but there's a really interesting question or sort of topic embedded in that, which is, you know, what do people keep from each other? How do you fully trust another person, or should you, or can you, you know? And he really brought that issue home.
Yeah, true. So true. Don't change the channel, because when we're back, Dr. Drew and I answer your voicemails, Loveline style. There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread. So here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co. All right, Dr. Drew. So our first voicemail comes from Jenny, who's 23 years old.
Hi, Emily. I'm 23. Basically, I've been in a relationship with a man for the past 2 years, and we did long distance for the past year, and I decided to move to Texas, and he is following me there, and I basically am just feeling a little bit lost on what to do and how to navigate this, because I do love him, but a part of me thinks that I need to explore other people and that the idea of being with the person I'm going to spend the rest of my life with right now is just really overwhelming to me. And so I wanted to know what your thoughts on that were. We've both already signed leases. We're not living together, but we've both already signed leases. And I'm just trying to navigate this situation in the best way I can. So thank you. I love your show.
Go.
So I got a lot of thoughts. First of all, basically, remember basically, that?
Yes. Yes.
She said
she
basically,
started with basically
several
the
times,
first
which
word
was something
basically.
Mike. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Which is something Mike made fun of a lot back in the day. So she's 23, for goodness sakes. Of course she doesn't know, you know, who she wants to spend the rest of her life with. And I don't know how she went from a long distance relationship to this, I have to get engaged to this guy, except that he has moved his whole life down to Texas. I get now you feel the burden of having sort of, I'm sure you didn't ask him to do that, but you might have spoken up before he did that, and now you feel guilty on top of everything else. But I would argue two things in the strongest terms. Well, three things. And you tell me if you agree on this. First, you're only 23 years old. Of course you want to date around and meet other people. It's the healthiest thing in the world, of course. And you don't want to commit to somebody for the rest of your life. Maybe you'll go back to this guy. Maybe you won't. I don't know. You can't even really think about that right now, number one. Number two, if you were to commit to him now, you would destroy this thing eventually. It would not be a happy marriage. It just wouldn't be. You can't do something when you're really not ready and have lots of doubts. And number three, I'm going to bet this isn't the guy for you. I'm just guessing. It could be, but I'm going to bet not.
Emily, yeah, I'm not feeling it at 23. And she said he followed me there, right? And she's feeling lost. And she doesn't like the idea of being with the person who I'm going to spend the rest of my life with is overwhelming to me. That's enough information right there. Like, to me, she knows it. She's got to be honest and don't let him in love that you're not living together, and don't let him move in and start speaking your truth now. Like, I think that we think it has to be this huge conversation. It's a breakup or stay together. But what if she started to explain to him, I'm having some concerns. Things are coming up for me. That's the healthiest thing to do, I think, rather than just cutting it. Let's talk about these feelings. And if he's like, what do you mean?
Agreed.
No, you're overwhelmed, blah, blah, blah. And that also, you're going to have more information. I think in relationships, if we have healthy conversations, we're always gathering information. Gathering data. We don't have to make a decision yet.
Yeah, agreed. Oh, yeah, and pay attention. You better pay attention too, because it's the data is embedded in there.
Hi, my name is Whitley. I am 32. I am a brand new listener to the podcast. I have only ever had one sexual partner. We have actually been together since I was 16. My husband and I have been married for 10 years this year when I found out that he has been having a major affair. So I am divorcing. I'm going to be a single mom of two very small children and have realized that I have been in a pretty sexually abusive relationship. Not in like he forced sex on me or anything, but more in that it was basically forced to do it when he wanted, only when he wanted it. I was demeaned a lot of the time. And so I don't know how to like move forward being a sexual being and like learning what I like and what I don't like and what I want. Because in the past, when I've tried to get what I want, I was basically told, like, no, that's wrong. You look ugly. I don't like that. So it's a lot. Okay. Bye.
Wow. That's a Whitley.
That is a lot.
That's a lot. Thank you so much for your question. So she's 32, got married 10 years ago. So there's the case of someone at 23 not really knowing their partner to circle back. But yep. What's your first thoughts here? That's a lot to unpack.
On one hand, I have like a feeling of sadness that this all happened and that she's stuck then with two kids and now she's having to deal with all this. On the other hand, I kind of feel like, first of all, I didn't notice a lot of sadness in her. And maybe just we weren't talking to her long enough, but I didn't notice it. It makes me think she really is coming to terms with the reality of this thing. It's like, she should not have done this. They've been together since they were 16. How the hell? You know, how could they possibly? You know, they were kids and they made this commitment. They did this thing. And I wish they could have stayed together for the family, for the kids, but it's not to be. And in that transition, there's great opportunity for Whitley. I mean, and I sort of heard it in her voice, I think, like a sense of being released from her prison. And I think she will find a lot of very open, willing partners out there. She's got to understand this man aimed to please. You tell them what you want. They're usually on it. They don't, unless it's something really outside of their repertoire, like really makes them uncomfortable. They're usually just, all right, let's thank you. Let's get on with that. So I think she should be completely at her liberty to do that. And in the meantime, just date a lot. You've got essentially, you know, from 16 to 25 to make up for when you should have been dating and hanging out with lots of people and figuring out who you are and what you want, what you like. Go do that. It's just enjoy it. And don't worry about what's going to happen when, with whom. Just enjoy
Great advice to not jump into another relationship right away. I want to say thank you, Whitley, for reaching out with this question, really. And I think to answer your question here about how does she move forward as a sexual being and to learn what she likes and what she doesn't like, because in the past...
She knows.
Right, so now she just has to learn, though. She doesn't even know who she is she's saying, because she could never express herself. I'm sure that she says, I don't know how to move forward being a sexual being, learning what I like, what I don't like, and what I want. Because in the past, when she tried, she was told, that's wrong, and you look ugly. I don't like that.
Oh my God, how awful. He was awful. This guy was awful. I mean, it was awful. A father of children.
So that's how sex is. Has to go. I'm really proud of her for moving on, too, after finding out the affair. Like, that's hard to do. I think just to leave and to pick up and like after with two small kids to finally leave after it's been abusive for so long. So hopefully she's going to get to the side. She is feeling hopeful because she did that. And I think that she knows that she can take care of herself and figure it out.
And again, it's that I always say that mental health is about accepting reality and regulating and managing the feelings around accepting reality on reality's terms. And Drew, I feel like she's such a good point. Reality. Like
mental health. Really, I want to get to that in a minute about mental health and sex. But I would also say to learn who you are as a sexual being is a process. And I love that you have the opportunity right now to figure out, like, huge fan of masturbation. Get smart sex. Look at the pillars and see where can you build more of your self-acknowledge and self-acceptance and understanding yourself. And
you know what? Yeah. She is a perfect candidate for your book.
Too, Drew. Yeah. Okay. So thanks for your question, Whitley. We got you.
Hey, Emily. It's Jacob from Raleigh, North Carolina. I'm 22 years old. I'm just curious because I've had sexual relationships in college and like they've been good. Like some are with condoms, some are without. And I'm having trouble finding that like connection with the girl because it's like a college hookup and the condom just like doesn't make it feel like I don't feel anything. Like I don't feel anything when I use a condom and it's like I don't have any alternative to go to no condom because, you know, like I was raised like in a family where it's like, okay, you're not having a kid, you know, until you're ready. And it's like just the risk just seems so high. But also from another aspect, it's just like I'm having trouble building a relationship with somebody because it's just strictly, you know, it's if you're just having sex. Like I feel like, you know, you go out, you party, and, you know, you're not doing foreplay, you're just getting straight into sex, and I wake up and the girl's in my bed. And I just don't know how to find that fire with women anymore because sex just isn't cutting it for me. I don't know. I don't know where this question's going.
Huh. Oh, my God. Jacob. So
I love him. Yeah.
A little bit confused, right? So is it about condoms? Yeah. So he says, just to recap here, he's in sexual relationships, some are with condoms, some are without. He can't feel anything with condoms because he's, you know, worried about having kids. But also he's having trouble building a relationship because it's just strictly sex. He's, you know, he's just having sex and, you know, probably drunk sex and there's no foreplay.
Well, this is sort of a good example of how literal men are. His brain, his young brain, and he's trying to struggle with figuring out why he doesn't feel a connection. he's concluded that it must be because I'm not having skid vagina contact when I have sex. That's why I can't feel close to somebody. That's literally what he's thinking. And as a male, I understand the young brain would go there. Like, that's everything is the sex. Therefore, if that's in any way interrupted, of course, that's why I can't make contact. He doesn't really understand intimacy. And again, young male, not surprising. That's pretty much all of us. And you're good at this topic. I mean, I'll let you swipe at it probably more than I can. But I would just say a good way in is to take sex off the table and start building time, logging hours with people you want to hang out with, breaking bread, learning about them, asking questions, telling them about yourself, and see what happens. See if you can find that thing we call relationship, and then see if sex grows out of that.
That is exactly what I would say to you, that he's got to start – what I'd say to him is he's got to start building these relationships. But let me go back to something. I don't know if I thought about this, Drew. So you're saying that the condoms – it's not about him not being able to feel it, because I'm always so tired of being going, I can't feel anything. It's like a raincoat on my dick. But what you're saying is it's really because he has no connection. It's like it's that on top of the fact that there's no intimacy. He's concluded that
He's concluded that because I'm not feeling anything, that must be the reason I'm not having intimacy, which of course,
true. It's just interesting. I never thought the condom thing. I never put it to the fact of like your condom, you'd feel less, especially if you don't have intimacy. But if you're with somebody that you connect with and whatever, you wouldn't mind. The condom would be just part of it. You wouldn't really think about it like that.
It's really not that that's happening to him. He's just struggling, trying to figure out why he does not feel connection. And because he doesn't really understand he doesn't understand intimacy, he's made a false conclusion. Brilliant. It must
okay,
be the
condom. So Jacob, I think we're in agreement here that it's time to not just have the drunk hookup sex and to start to be friends with women.
Take that off the table. Take that away. Let's go hang out with people in intimate connection and context where you can, where people are open themselves to you but don't have any expectations. Just go, look, you're learning about these things. You're trying to figure out how it all works.
Exactly.
Go do it.
That's exactly how you learn. I'm trying to think back in college. Like, I remember after class, some guy would be like, hey, you want to study together, right? That's how we would meet. Are you going to go to the bar tonight? And, you know, just you're in college. Like, start talking to me. That's the other thing, Drew. People don't have experience just going up and saying hi anymore. They're not doing that anymore. That's what we had to do.
I know.
And now we don't have to do that anymore. No. That's how I met all my boyfriends. Previous to cell phones, I met either a fix-up, but usually it was like I met him out at a party, or I met him on the street, and they were like, hey, and you start talking to him. People got to bring that back, just basic conversation. Okay, we've got another one for you then. Yes. One more.
Yes, yes, ma'am.
Okay, fun.
Hi, Emily. My name is Brandon. I'm 29. I'm calling because my partner and I have recently decided to open our marriage, and it's rolling pretty fast. And my concerns are kind of a lot, but they're related to things that I know you could answer. My partner's moving fairly quickly in this, and we've been married about 10 years, and I'm just wanting to make sure, since I'm going along with it, that I'm doing it in a way that won't potentially ruin us. Anyways, I listen to your shows all the time. And yeah, thank you so much. Thank you. Bye.
Open marriage, Drew. That's what's changed in the last 15 years, that more and more people are open to non-monogamy. But I know what's your thoughts on this, opening it up?
I just never see it work out. I mean, it goes for a while and then it just ends in a pile of dust. It's just, you know, my friend Jason Ellis? Okay. He and Katie had a very open all over the place, and they celebrated it. And I thought, wow, here are two people, I guess, that can really make this work, except now they're getting divorced.
They are
in a massive mess, and it ends in unhappiness, because humans, you just can't predict. It's too many feelings, too much boundaryless. It can be very exciting, very interesting. People can have all kinds of enjoyment from it, but I've never seen it not. I thought I found one. I thought I found Jason Katie and Jason.
I did too. No, I did not know that.
No, I thought to myself when I heard about this, and I've talked to them both about this, that even you guys, even you, it ends in misery. And then people go, oh, well, you know, monogamous couples end that way too. Yeah, I'll grant you that. They do, but not always. And my experience with the open stuff is it always goes down in flames. It may take 10 years. And when it goes down, it's just awful for people, because it's all kinds of unanticipated hurt feelings. And then people feel like they let the other person down, or they are inadequate because they shouldn't have these feelings. And it just goes all over the place.
Yeah, that's interesting, Drew. I'm surprised about them. The only couples that I have seen at work, and I do have friends who have made it work over the years for like 10, 15 years, not many, but a few. And for them, and this is definitely not for everybody at all, but they literally practice this very rigorous honesty about everything. And they talk and talk and they talk more and they analyze every time they go out with someone else, they talk about it, or they open it up and they close it again, or they only go to like sex parties, or there's different ways to play around. But yeah, it is trickier. And I think that there's some great books on it I can recommend to people. I think one is like Opening Up, and there's a few more we'll put in the show notes, but I think you should see a therapist about it. I think that you should have a contract. You should keep talking about it, but it's definitely not for everybody.
The other thing I have found is usually one person is really wants it and the other person just sort of agrees to it. And yeah, that's never good either. That's
never good. Yeah. You do not want to talk your partner into any like open relationship or my partner wants me to have a threesome. Like that's going to be a disaster. Yeah. You have to want to have the threesome.
How about if both are, even that can really end up in not good place. But what if somebody hires a professional? The third person is somebody that literally is hired to be the third person.
Yeah.
That to me, it's like, well, that's a boundary at least. You know what I mean? At least there's not the opportunity for things to go out of control.
It's really about excellent communication and knowing your boundaries. And gosh, many couples just don't. It's not for everybody, but I do have noticed in the
I'm sure somebody makes it work. But I thought I'd found them. And even then.
Well, they're wild though. I mean, they're a good time. Okay, Drew, that was a blast. I have to ask you the quickie questions that we ask all of our guests.
Okay.
Five questions. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. What is your biggest turn on?
Really probably partner climaxing.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Biggest turn off?
Somebody, your partner's not into it or uncomfortable in some way. That would be like, no good.
What makes good sex?
These sound like such bizarre, sweeping kinds of answers. But I mean, for me, it's just somebody I'm just have to be just crazy attracted to. Like I really, really super crazy attracted to make it makes good for me.
Something you would tell your younger self about sex and relationships?
You know, I remember... My parents didn't have a great relationship. And so I always thought that after marriage, it's one of the reasons I delayed marriage is sort of like I was in my head thought, well, there's, you have a good time, you have fun, you get married, then you die. And, and so what I would tell my younger self is you pick the right person, things continue to flourish and maybe get better.
Wow. You and Susan, couples goals. What's the number one thing you wish everyone knew about sex?
Number one thing, well, that's like saying you're a cardiologist, teach me about the heart. So the number one thing, I kind of feel that thing we talked about with women blaming themselves for things that men experience, that has always really bothered me because it's almost heartbreaking for me to see women do that. And it's unfair and they do it to themselves and it's just not right. It's not what's happening. Mm. And if they just understood that, it would create a lot more happiness, seems
true.
To me.
So. God, that's a good one. I'm glad we hammered that home. Thank you, Dr. Drew, for being here. I so appreciate you. Where can people find you these days?
We are doing drdrew.com, where you can find After Dark, and you can also find my other podcast I do on Still with Adam after all these years. He and I have been doing a podcast for years, and I do one by myself that Emily is just now on. And I do a streaming show Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 3 o'clock Pacific time on drdrew.tv. And Susan created and produces this thing, and it's turned into a big deal.
Okay.
It is, I've been interviewing all the medical people and epidemiologists and researchers who were canceled during COVID to see what I can learn from them. And people like RFK Jr. and Peter McCullough and Paul Ehrlich, all these, everybody, we interviewed all of them. And I don't agree with everything they say, but I've learned something from every single one of them. It's been very interesting.
Fascinating. Okay.
DrDrew.tv is where you get that.
I love it. Thank you, Drew. I love you. I appreciate you for being here.
All right. Make a plan.
I will. I'm going to text Susan when we hang up. We're going to make this happen. Bye.
Okay.
That's it for today's episode. See you on Friday. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us a review wherever you listen to the podcast and share this with a friend or partner. You can find me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Sex with Emily. Oh, I've been told I give really good email. So sign up at sexwithemily.com. And while you're there, check out my free guides and articles for more ways to prioritize your pleasure. If you'd like to ask me about your sex life, dating, or relationships, call my hotline, 559-TALK-SEX. That's 559-825-5739. Or go to sexwithemily.com/askemily. Special thanks to Acast for powering the Sex with Emily podcast. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.